Palmyra et al. Versus Commissioner of Highways, Joseph E. Blackburn Jr., Appellants Counsel, Toby J. Heighton, Solicitor General, Michelle Callen, Deputy Solicitor General, Martine Ciccone, Deputy Solicitor General, Jessica Samuels, Assistant Solicitor General, Zachary Glubiak, John Marshall Fellow, Donald Anderson, Deputy Attorney General, Nancy Ox, Senior Assistant General, Appellees Counsel.
Counsel, this is Justice Goodwin. I wanted to inform you that Senior Justice Russell will be sitting for the Chief Justice on this case. The appellant may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. If Your Honors, please. My name is Joe Blackburn, and I am representing the landowners in this condemnation case that comes up to you from Fluvanna County. This involves a taking by the Highway Department of the landowners, a portion of the landowners' land located at 53 in Palmyra, just south of the county seat up there. And the Highway Department took this property for the purposes of constructing a roundabout at that intersection. Our exhibit number 2, which is found on page 311 of the appendix, is a conceptual plan of the fourth leg of the roundabout that request of the landowner by VDOT. And VDOT prepared that plan and presented it to the landowner. And that plan is the plan that Mr. Sutton testified that showed what the imposition of the fourth leg of the roundabout would be upon the landowner's property. Mr. Sutton was one of the owners. He's been in real estate commercial development for over 40 years. And he testified on behalf of the landowners. And his testimony was that the imposition of this fourth leg of this roundabout onto their property has in effect compressed the frontage and compressed the development potential of the frontage of this property by 25%. He was not cross-examined at all on that testimony, and the court let that testimony go to the commissioners. And then after the exceptions were made to the commissioner's report, the court struck the testimony, thereby eliminating the damage to the residue of the property. The cases that we rely on is predominantly the Lynch and Gorman cases. And in the Lynch case, this court said that the landowner is allowed to show circumstances which make up the elements of damage to his property. That's exactly what Mr. Sutton testified to when he testified about the impact of the imposition of this fourth leg onto the landowner's property. And if you look at that conceptual plan that VDOT prepared, there are many things written on that plan that Mr. Sutton testified without any contradiction. There was a VDOT representative in court. He never contradicted this. All of the things that conceptual plan requires are things that the landowner is going to have to do and pay for at the landowner's cost. Now, of course, the you cannot add up individual elements of something like that, but you can consider those things in your testimony as to the overall damage to the residue, and that's what Mr. Sutton did. So the first prong that is mentioned in the Lynch case, citing Gorman, is that the landowner is allowed to show circumstances which make up the elements of damage to his property. And I would argue that that's exactly what Mr. Sutton's testimony did. And it also provided that he can testify as to that a portion of it will be less valuable and how much less valuable. And his testimony was that the frontage of the property would be less valuable because of the imposition of this roundabout, this fourth leg of the roundabout upon his property. I would also mention the Kingsland case I cited in my reply brief, which was an old case. But in that case, it referenced, it was talking about frontage damage to the frontage of the property. And it said there that the landowner may say that part of it, meaning the frontage, which fronts on Lombardi Street, will be less valuable, and how much. That's exactly what Mr. Sutton testified to, that the frontage will be less valuable because the imposition of this fourth leg of the roundabout has compressed the development potential of the property. Mr. Call, Joseph Call, testified as an expert witness for the highway, and he never considered the imposition at all of this fourth leg of the roundabout upon the damage to the residue. And as I pointed in my brief, that we of course took a view of the property, which is I think entitled a great weight in a condemnation case. And after the view, one of the commissioners specifically wanted to see when we introduced Exhibit 2, being that highway VDOT's conceptual plan for the fourth leg of the roundabout, one of the commissioners was anxious to see that. So we would ask the court to reverse the trial court, reinstate Mr. Sutton's testimony, and enter final judgment on the majority commissioner's report. Let me just talk briefly also about the plans that were precluded from being into evidence. These plans are contained in the record in a supplemental addendum sent up by the clerk of Fluvanna. And they contain 22 pages of plans. These plans were prepared over 10 years before the take was made in this condemnation case. And the landowners had spent over $120,000 in having these plans prepared. And when we went to court, the court precluded the use of those plans. And I would simply argue that if you look at the Lynch case, the facts of our case are right on point with the Lynch case. The Lynch case, the trial court precluded an overlay that showed the impact of the take on the residue of the property. And this court reversed the trial court and said that overlay should have been admitted. And we presented an overlay in proffer. That overlay is on the last page of our brief.
Counsel,
and that
excuse me, Counselor.
Yes, ma'am.
This is Justice Chafin. Slightly different from the Lynch case is the, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this properly, but the Wamonco case. And that seems to be closer on point when I look at it. Maybe you can help me understand what's wrong, because when you look at your overlay plans, it requires certain things that are out of your control. They're controlled by third parties. And one of those things, of course, is the widening of the bridge, which it has been said would cost over $4 million. Also, the property's in the floodplain, so that would require the county to have to make some changes as far as permitting. And so also you would have to have the state would have to take in some other property in order to widen the lane that you would require as far as the road lane. So is there, am I misreading that case, or how does that compare with Lynch?
Well, I think if you look at the Wamco case, in the Wamco case, the landowner had to acquire property from third parties in order to develop the property as it wanted to. And it had to have the highway department build additional roads in order to develop their property. And the Wamco case determined that was too speculative as to whether or not that property could be acquired or whether or not the state would build the extra road. In this case, the bridge had already been widened. And if you look at page 314 of our, in the appendix, that shows the impact of the roundabout onto our property. Up at the top, it shows another road. That road was abandoned. At the time this condemnation occurred, the state had, they'd had an earlier condemnation case, and that road was abandoned. And if you look at VDOT's exhibit that shows the tape, the typical exhibit they put in these condemnation cases, it's found on page 309. That shows the roundabout, and our property abuts that roundabout. What they took was our property to be able to build that roundabout. That was way after the bridge had already been completed. On page 309, our property abuts up right to the circle of the roundabout that they took. So the notion that we have to have the highway move additional roads was simply not correct. That is not true at all. Also, as to the floodplain, these plans that we submitted and that came to you in the addendum to the record, if you look at those plans, they are very detailed plans about what to do regarding the floodplain. They have the 100-year floodplain drawn on those plans. This was a very detailed plans to get this project done. And so the question, and this property is within the comprehensive plan of Fluvanna County that calls for commercial development of this property. So the notion that we would have to get things approved from a floodplain standpoint, that's normal in the development of property. The question is it speculative? Is it? And I would argue it's not speculative. It can get done, and it would be done. It's shown on the plans of the project. So WAMCO had nothing to do with WAMCO had nothing to do with plans. There was never any issue of plans in WAMCO. This case is much more like Lynch than it is like WAMCO. And as I put in my brief, even the lawyer for the highway department in the motion in limine stage said the only issue with the plans was whether or not they were accurate. That they weren't trying to preclude the plans. The only issue is whether or not they were accurate. And then they come to trial and they argue WAMCO, which had nothing to do with plans. And it.
Thank you, counsel. You've answered the question.
Thank you. So anyway, the as I said, they had prepared these plans over 10 years ago, and the overlay was not admitted, and we just think that was error in contradiction of the Lynch case. So, but our request would be that you reverse it on the basis that Mr. Sutton was entitled to testify as to the damage to the residue. He testified based upon the hold. Had he been able to get the plans in, that would have simply corroborated, as you can see from the shaded area of that overlay, that would simply have corroborated what he said this did in compressing the frontage of their property. Thank you.
All right. You've got 1 minute and 28 seconds left if you'd like to use it for rebuttal.
I will. Pelley. Thank you.
You may proceed, appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Jessica Samuels for the Appellee Commissioner of the Highway. In this appeal, the landowners challenge an award of over $107,000 in compensation for a narrow sliver of undeveloped land along the road at the edge of their property. All told, VDOT acquired less than one-third of 1 acre, which was not even 1% of the much larger 44-acre parcel. In exchange for this very small acquisition, landowners have already received, and VDOT does not contest, a compensation award of more than one-third of what the landowners paid to purchase the entire 50-plus acres. Before this court, landowners argue that the circuit court erred in confirming that $107,000 award, and they should get another opportunity to try their case. But they have failed to identify any reversible error in the proceedings below, particularly in light of the deferential standard of review that applies here. The two evidentiary rulings that landowners challenge regarding Mr. Sutton's damage estimate and the proffered site plan exhibits were well within the circuit court's discretion to admit or exclude evidence at trial. And the circuit court's decision not to grant a new trial is a classic example of invited error and would fail on the merits even if it was not. To take these arguments in turn, the circuit court did not abuse its discretion in excluding Mr. Sutton's damage valuation. To clarify the procedural history here, the circuit court did not reverse itself out of the blue once the trial had started with regards to Mr. Sutton's testimony. Instead, the court was just adhering to its earlier pretrial ruling that damages may not be calculated on a per lot basis, which is consistent with and required by this court's precedent. Even though the court had already issued that ruling, landowners raised the issue again the morning of trial and convinced the circuit court to reconsider as to Mr. Sutton, in part by assuring the court that his testimony would comply with its earlier ruling because it would not be based on a one per 1 acre pad site. But when Mr. Sutton took the stand, his testimony made clear that his valuation did exactly that, exactly what the court had said was not permissible: calculate damages according to individual lots that did not exist. My friend on the other side this morning points to the supposed fourth leg of the roundabout as the basis for Mr. Sutton's damage testimony. But when you look at the record, it's clear that the basis of his damage testimony was the loss of a hypothetical pad site, one hypothetical lot. And that it was certainly not an abuse of discretion for the circuit court to conclude that, much less to conclude that twice, both before trial and then again after trial.
Counsel, this is Justice Kelsey. If I may interrupt you with a question. Tell me if I'm thinking this through correctly. The per lot valuation presupposed future development and future rezoning. Am I right?
Yes, Your Honor. Not necessarily rezoning, but yes, it presupposes
future development plans being approved by the locality. How does Helmick Family Farm impact your argument, if at all?
Your Honor, I think our argument is consistent with Helmick for several reasons. The first is that Helmick was addressing a reasonable probability of rezoning and whether that could be taken into account in the fair market value calculation. And so what was happening in that case was, if for purposes of damage, the question was whether the future probability of rezoning meant somebody would be willing to pay more for the parcel, whether it affected the fair market value before the take and after the take. And that's important because that's the measure of damages to the residue, is the fair market value before as compared to the fair market value after. And the question there was whether the reasonable probability of rezoning could be affected, could be relevant. And the court held that it was, and that makes sense because of course, a buyer might be willing to pay more if the permitted uses of a land are going to change. That's not what's at issue here, though. What's at issue here is that Mr. Sutton didn't offer a fair market value before and a fair market value after. He offered this number, $545,000, as the loss of one site. And that's what's not permitted by this court's precedent in Anderson. And so Helmick was an entirely different situation as a legal matter in terms of the question before the court. Helmick also importantly is consistent with WAMCO and upholds and affirms WAMCO, which the court was discussing with my friend on the other side, about the concept that contingencies outside of the landowner's control are something that can make evidence speculative and therefore inadmissible. And so for that reason, Helmick also does not undermine our argument on WAMCO either.
So what is your list of third-party contingencies?
Your Honor, our list here is, first, the changes to Route 15. So if you look at the addendum we submitted with our brief, Addendum 3, this is also in the record and in the appendix. This is just a clearer copy where we highlighted it to try to show the court.
I don't want you to run out of time, but changes to Route 15, what other third-party things?
Your Honor, I think there are other third-party issues. They would be approval to build in the floodplain and getting the site plan approved by the county. But if I could just note, the changes to Route 13 are very important because contrary to what my friend on the other side has represented this morning, the bridge at issue has never been widened. It remains two lanes. And so these plans under WAMCO that they were trying to get in show a left turn lane that didn't exist and that would require widening of a bridge that hasn't been widened. And so we would argue that's an important third-party contingency that the court should consider. But to answer Your Honor's question, there are others as well, that some of the buildings on the plans were in the floodplain and so would have to be get separate approvals, as Justice Chapin noted. And also that the site plan itself would have to be approved by the county,
let me interrupt for a second and assume without conceding the hypothetical that Helmick stands for the proposition that this area of law is not that complicated. If you can show a reasonable probability by our preponderance of the evidence, then that should be taken into account for fair market valuation. So assume without conceding that, are you saying that those three things, the floodplain problem, the site plan being approved, and the changes to Route 15 and the widening, they are, as an evidentiary matter, insufficient to create a prima facie case of a preponderance of a reasonably imminent change in status of this particular piece of property?
Your Honor, I think there are two different issues here. I think one is whether a landowner can offer evidence of future development. And as a general matter, VDOT doesn't contest that. Lynch makes that very clear, and the court's precedents make that very clear. A separate issue is WAMCO, which is the actual paper, the plans, the map that you're trying to admit. Are they too speculative because they depend on things that may never come to pass? And there, I think that our argument is that these changes to Route 15 and these approvals, it was at least within the circuit court's discretion to conclude that they were too speculative to make that evidence admissible under WAMCO. And so I think the Helmick case addresses those two different points, but to clarify, VDOT's position is, as a general matter, of course, the possibility of future development or even the fact that you've drawn up reasonably plausible plans could increase the fair market value of land. We don't contest that. But when you're trying to get the plans in, they have to satisfy this court standard that they can't be too speculative or too remote under WAMCO. And so plans, the idea of development may or may not have a WAMCO problem. There are two different issues that have to be resolved there.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to briefly note, Your Honors, that the issue of the fourth leg of the roundabout, although my friend on the other side this morning has noted that the fourth leg was the basis for Mr. Sutton's testimony, the circuit court had concluded that the basis for his testimony was the loss of a hypothetical pad site, and it was well within the circuit court's discretion to conclude that. The record makes it abundantly clear at A58, which is the first disclosure from Mr. Sutton that says he's going to be testifying based on the loss of a hypothetical pad site, one of four sites. His damages estimate in that disclosure is $545,000. There is a supplemental disclosure, which is in our brief at Addendum 2. It's also in the record at R621, shows he's using that exact same number. And specifically, that disclosure says, and I quote, "Each will opine that the roundabout has reduced the development potential of the residue by reducing its frontage size and thus eliminating a fourth building pad." We see on the next page.
Counsel, does the record exclude the possibility, that the landowner reformulated, rethought his testimony, and therefore it went to the commissioners on an alternate basis, not the one that relied on the pad site.
I do think the record excludes that possibility, Your Honor. I also think that it was within the court's discretion to make that determination after trial, and that it is a very deferential standard here in terms of an evidentiary ruling. To look at the record, the reason I think it excluded it, I think there are two main reasons. The first is that throughout the trial, discovery and pretrial proceedings, Mr. Sutton had disclosed just one basis of damage, and it was the pad site, and it was $545,000. And then at trial, after a lengthy argument on the issue, which Mr. Sutton had been permitted to sit at counsel table through the whole trial, and so he heard the argument and understood the issues and understood what words not to say to try to skirt the court's ruling. Then when he's testifying at trial, this is at A281, he's asked, how did you get to this number, which he offers, it's $545,000. It's exactly the same as the original and the supplemental disclosure. So it's the only basis and the only number that VDOT has ever received in pretrial proceedings. And then he testifies to that exact same number at trial. And when he's asked, how did you get that number? He says, I took the frontage acreage, which is roughly 5.5 acres, quote, and I damaged that at 25%. And so at trial, he's not avoiding the fact that he's using 1/4 or 25% or a quarter, which corresponds exactly to the loss of 1 of 4 pad sites, which is exactly what had been disclosed all along. And so I do think, based on what was disclosed before trial and then what happened at trial, not to mention that if he reformulated his testimony that morning, that it never would have been disclosed to VDOT, certainly not in compliance with the pretrial deadlines. I do think the record excludes the possibility that he reformulated and came up with something different. And so it wasn't an abuse of discretion for the circuit court to adhere to its prior ruling and then to set that aside on VDOT's objections.
Thank you.
On the site plans, Your Honor, I'd just like to revisit one quick issue and note that, as Justice Kelsey noted, the helmet case, if the court does read this law differently than VDOT does, there's no need to actually reach the substantive issue here, because on the site plans, after they weren't admitted at the trial, clearly, after the trial, the landowners didn't file any exceptions, which they're required to under Virginia Code 25.1-233. Court's decision in Fairmac makes clear that when exceptions aren't filed, issues are not preserved and they're waived. And so the site plans were not admitted, no exceptions were filed. And so to the extent the substantive question may be something the court doesn't want to address or thinks is more complicated, then procedurally those arguments are also defective. With my remaining time, Your Honor, I'd just like to turn to the third assignment of error, which is the landowner's request for a new trial here. This is a classic example of invited error. And the way we know that is in the record at A159. This is where the court is ruling on the exceptions at the end of the trial and explicitly says the court will entertain argument from counsel by memoranda within 10 days as to whether the court should confirm the award of the take only or grant a new trial. So the court has presented the parties with two cases and is basically saying, I understand I just set aside some testimony. Help me figure out what we need to do here. How should we proceed? And you have two options, confirm the award of the take only or grant a new trial. And if you go up the email thread, back a page on A157, counsel for the landowners emails the court and says that, quote, both parties agree to the first of the two options you gave us in your email, setting aside Mr. Sutton's testimony. Your Honor, that is a classic example of the approbating and reprobating that this court's precedent doesn't allow. And so for that reason, that assignment of error fails procedurally as well. If there are no further questions, VDOT would ask this court to affirm. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Counsel, you have 1 minute and 28 seconds if you'd like to provide rebuttal.
I would, Your Honor. Let me say this. There's no question that Mr. Sutton thinks that the imposition of this roundabout is limiting the reducing or compressing the amount of land that they can develop on the frontage of this property. But it's not a lot. He didn't testify as to a lot. Even counsel for the highway department in motion and limine stage said, and this is at page 184, I don't believe the plans, the landowner's plans, show subdivided lots. And then the court strikes his evidence because he says he was in effect testifying as to a subdivided lot. In the highway's brief before you on page 19, in a footnote, they say it appears that Sutton's valuation was not based on a 1 acre pad site. So it's not a lot. It wasn't based on a 1 acre pad site. What it was based on was his opinion from an acreage standpoint of how much there had been a reduced development potential of the property. Certainly, we're not going to get to the point where in a condemnation case, you can't even reference something on a per acre basis. And that's all he did in this case, and that's what he testified to on the per acre basis. And he attributed.
Did your site plans presuppose the necessity of the bridge being widened in the future?
My site plans did not. They were prepared 10 years before, as Mr. Sutton testified. They've been trying for 10 years to get this intersection approved, and they couldn't because of the bureaucratic limbo. It did not. But the bridge,
just the presiding justice's permission, may I ask one more question? I think I asked the question improperly. Did your damage formulation testimony through the expert presuppose that the bridge needed to be widened at some point?
No, sir. He did not. No.
That's all I needed. Thank you so much.
As to inviting error, he gave us two choices, either a new trial or sustaining the take.
Counsel, your time is up.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. All righty. Thank you all very much. The attorneys may excuse themselves. Thank you all very much.